Akron, Ohio. I am not your host, Nick, and today I am joined by...
Not Sir.
So, you know how you go to your favorite bar and your local bartender isn't there? You ask, where's Jeff? Jeff no longer works here. I'm Steve. And you're thinking, hey, who's this idiot? I like Jeff. But you still want your drink, and even though Steve doesn't mix your drink the same way you're used to, like Jeff, you still like the same bar. You don't want to have to go to a different bar. And even Steve might feel kind of bad because Jeff trained him. Jeff showed him how to work the cash register, where the tonic was on the soda gun, who tips, who doesn't. Well, I'm Steve. What can I get you? Well, welcome to our show, folks. We are in quarantine, as I'm sure most of you all are.
We're in our top secret on the tropes isolation chamber.
Yeah, we are actually underground right now, literally. And hopefully the sound quality isn't too bad. We've got the old school iPad in the middle of the desk till we get a better setup here in the bunker. We've got our velvet Malcolm X, and it's the Malcolm with a beard.
It's the Malcolm that's actually Denzel Washington.
yeah, velvet pang. We have no idea when we'll be back to normal. Nick is, I guess, in like the trenches, and as most of our...
You're talking about parenthood.
Well, yeah, new parenting and dealing with a medical crisis that's 100 years in the making.
So who are we really?
Well, I'm Sir.
And I'm Eva.
So our first episode, well...
We think this is episode number 214. You guys have been going through some reviews, some old episodes of reviews that you guys have done. And we're going to try to get things sort of back on track with something else to talk about. And like everything, like everybody else on the planet, we decided to spend our first week at home watching Tiger King.
Yeah, there seems to be two mysterious illnesses sweeping the planet right now. As we know from our abysmal episode outbreak, that there's, of course, the novel coronavirus, also known as the Trump virus, also known as bat flu. And there's also tiger fever. And that's what we want to talk to you today about, folks. So, for those who have been under a rock or maybe quarantined with no Netflix, like...
Statistically speaking, some people might be.
Some people might be.
Unless Netflix passwords also spread, like coronavirus, to the point where everyone has a Netflix password, even if they don't know it.
Yeah. So, there's a Netflix miniseries out called Tiger King. And is it Murder, Mayhem, and...
Madness?
And Madness. And I'm wondering if it's even worth trying to sum up what this documentary is about.
Really, however many words we want to string together to describe Tiger King right now, we're only going to be about 50% accurate at best.
Mm-hmm. So, gay chief of police...
Yes, erstwhile chief of police, small town Texas chief of police, opens a zoo as a memorial to his deceased brother. He decides that the cheap way to populate the zoo is to start buying tigers that are too grown up for other people who have tiger cubs to keep anymore, because you can get them on the cheap because no one wants them. He acquires a couple hundred of them, handful of husbands.
Also, I feel like we're glossing over the magician aspect.
That's the thing. Like, every time you try to describe anybody in this documentary, you're leaving out, like, half of the crazy shit about them.
So we tried to really think of, like, how do we sum this thing up? And honestly, to me, the main point is tiger fever is real.
Yes. The kind of people who seek to be close to large and dangerous animals are at once distinctive and yet reassuringly similar to each other bunch.
The documentary opens with the director, who sets out to make a movie about snakes.
Yes, he was making a documentary film about people who keep snakes, particularly ones that are still venomous.
So he's doing his thing, the snake documentary thing, and meets a guy.
A guy who's coming in to buy a snake, and he just happens to say, "You want to see what else I got in my van?"
Which, that's any time you're asked that question, listeners, you can say no.
I was raised well, and I knew that the answer is no. You never go anywhere near anyone's van.
So he says yes.
And he finds a snow leopard.
And there's an animal enthusiast who says pretty early that all different kinds of, you know, people who own different kinds of animals all have different personalities.
Right.
You know, chimpanzee people are a certain way, snake people are a certain way. And then he goes, tiger people, they're fucking crazy, and they're backstabbers.
Yep.
And essentially, I feel like the entire point of this documentary is to show us that that is, in fact, the truth. So, one thing you'll quickly notice is that anyone who owns one of these tigers... Not only doesn't own just one, however, they start to take on similar traits.
You're right.
So, number one.
Blonde hair.
Blonde hair. And or frosted tips.
Yes. It probably starts as frosted tips and just works its way back to your scalp.
Odd hats. Novelty hats.
Distinctive hats.
Distinctive hats. Maybe So whether that
is... It's not judgmental. We're not judging anybody here.
Whether that's Joe Exotic and his assortment of distinctive hats. Yes. That are this usually over-the-top cowboy hats. Whether that's international tiger smuggling con man Jeff Lowe, who seemed to rock the Affliction bandana with a NASCAR ball cap.
Right. Or Ferrari. I think he had a Ferrari one.
Ferrari ball
cap. In any case, he's an imposter.
And or Carol, who, she really didn't have any distinctive...
She had the flower garland.
You're right. Flower garland and, of course, the cat print, leopard print, everything.
Everywhere.
Carol Baskin, former
Bobcat dealer.
Bobcat dealer.
Persian exotic.
Llama lawn mowing business owner.
Tell me lawn had two L's. If it didn't, I know why it failed.
Tim Stark, who told the USDA that he beat leopards.
Might have been a mountain lion, like a smaller cat, but still like too big to own.
Beat them to death with a baseball bat. And then seemed to be incredulous in the interview we watched as to why anybody would have a problem with that.
He wasn't incredulous. He just thought that it was his right to do that and that he didn't have to explain why he would do it that way.
So, and that leads us to Doc Antle and the next major symptom of tiger fever. So after the distinctive hats, the blonde frosted tips, there's also...
Harem.
The predilection for harems of some kind.
Yes.
So for Joe Exotic, that was a string of essentially young...
Barely legal men.
Right.
Barely legal, mostly straight men.
And for Doc Antle, that's a harem, quote-unquote, of...
Barely legal.
Barely legal women that he... Essentially, as he says, that people think... that he brings onto his tiger farm and traps them in a cult. But they think that they're just there to train tigers.
To learn to be animal trainers. He has this magical program that's going to teach you how to be an animal trainer. And then you get breast implants, and that's how you know you're a real animal trainer.
And you also have to wear tiger bra.
Or whatever he wants you to.
And he changes their names.
Like any cult.
There seems to be a... kind of a bent towards violence that develops, and or any other in criminal activities, and tattoos.
Yeah, that was going to be my other trademark of big cat collecting, is not necessarily everybody, however, a predilection for very large, very bold.
Kind of bad.
Not necessarily, because I'm going to bring up somebody from history that was another exotic tiger collector who has a very nice one of these, but... You know, basically your early 90s modern primitive reading heavy tribal tattooing.
The heavy tribal.
Now, when we see the guys in Tiger King, it's not as good. However, there was a tattooer in Gary, Indiana named Roy Boy, who was known for having tigers in his shop. And one of his associates, who was also kind of worked with the tigers, he wasn't a tattooer, he was a friend of Roy's. He was known for, pretty thoroughly covered in tribal tattoos, very early, before it was really a trend. And it's said that Mike Tyson met these two guys. I think he sold one of his tigers to Roy, and that's where he saw this dude with this tribal tattooing, and that's where Mike Tyson wanted to get his. He was inspired by this dude in Indiana.
Tyson talks a little bit about owning tigers and why he owned tigers. You know, he says that it started with, you know, wanting to have the best jewelry, wanting to have the best car, wanting to have, quote unquote, the best, you know, best looking woman, wanting to have a jet, the best guns, and it essentially turns into a process of him them trying to outdo anything.
Yeah.
Anyone with the most over the top thing they can buy.
Yeah. And I would say that the tiger would be that.
Yeah. It turns into big cats.
Almost every time. I mean, it seems to be a natural progression of a certain kind of capitalist ideal in this country that eventually you end up with a big cat.
So the end of capitalism.
Yeah. I mean, that was the lesson in Scarface, right? Which brings us to, this is the great thing about Tiger King, folks. You think you've talked about everything. You think you've overdone it, or you're thinking too hard about it. You're talking to your friends too much about it. We didn't even get to the part where one of these exotic animal collectors is the inspiration for Tony Montana and Scarface.
Not just like a vague...
Not a vague resemblance, but actual murder.
The guy. Like, and it's really 100% the influence. He has the same chair. The
same initials. Same initials. So he has the same monogram that Tony Montana does.
I don't think Tony Montana had the Lady Rolex wearing chimpanzee, though.
No, but he did have a tiger.
He did have a tiger. And he did chop a dude up with a saw. Well,
he was there.
In the movie.
He was there. He wasn't the one holding the saw, was he?
Well, in Scarface, he's about to be sawed.
Mm-hmm.
And in real life, the inspiration...
Yeah, somehow one of the most like underplayed scenes in Tiger King is a man telling the camera that someone brought a dead body to his property and they didn't know how to cut it up, and so someone else on the property suggested they use a circular saw, and he just let them do it. And that's one of the most subtle, understated moments in the entire series.
Not to mention, he's probably the most relatable, level-headed person in the documentary, which says a lot, considering as his wife owns, was it?
Those little monkeys that people dress up in baby clothes.
And yet they're the most normal ones.
Mm-hmm.
Man, there's so much. I mean, there's murder for hire. It really reads like one of those.
There's possible other murders.
Yeah, I mean, there's a murder that involves possibly a man getting fed to a tiger.
Yeah, there's a tornado. At one point, on camera, tornado. By the time you get to the end of the thing, you've completely forgotten about the tornado. We have several people who have amputations.
Several people getting attacked by tigers on screen. One of whom loses his arm.
Right.
On camera. And they kind of like blur it out. Like there's one little like a square.
Yeah.
That kind of blurs it out. It's the most useless thing. Yeah, it's really just all around completely out of control. It reminds me of Carl Heisen and his Florida crime fiction. There's this gonzo element to it that actually is rounded out by a real gonzo journalist that used to be on the show Inside Edition and ended up having a huge drug habit. Rick Kirkham.
Yeah, we didn't even get to Rick Kirkham yet, our resident Hunter S. Thompson reporter in all of this.
Like a really like a low rent Hunter S. Thompson.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, he's got the hat. He's got like the whole thing.
Right.
And he's brought on because Joe Exotic, the Tiger King, is running a YouTube channel, which all the videos are still there, and they are surreal.
They are distinctive.
And so Rick Kirkham is
former Inside Edition reporter.
He's brought on to essentially turn the YouTube channel into a reality TV show.
Well, Joe didn't want that part. I think my understanding was Joe wanted him to do the production on the YouTube series, and Rick said, we're going to start filming this, all this other stuff that's happening on the farm here, and we're going to pitch that to, like, the Learning Channel or Discovery Channel or Animal Planet, and we're going to get a reality show out of that. So we have, like, three spheres here. We have our Tiger King documentary, which is filming Rick Kirkham filming Joe Exotic. And Rick Kirkham is filming Joe Exotic and also helping Joe Exotic produce Joe Exotic's TV show.
And keep in mind that this filming and archiving and editing is all happening in an alligator pen / studio.
Right. As one does.
Because, you know, I'd like to work in an alligator studio.
I mean, if we get enough Patreon subscribers someday, maybe we can get a couple gators down here.
Mm-hmm. There is, aside from a guy getting his arm ripped off, there's a suicide.
It certainly seems that way.
Yeah. I mean, which there was no warning for. Like, we could have really used a content warning there for some folks. There's Joe Exotic almost being killed by a tiger.
Possibly. Yeah, very easily. Joe Exotic fires a gun very close to one of the camera operators at one point. The camera operator doesn't even flinch.
Yeah, listeners, this thing called trigger discipline, where when you're holding a gun, you're supposed to keep your finger off the trigger. It's supposed to be straight along the trigger guard. And that is rarely, if ever, displayed in this film. So many guns are fired, used amazingly irresponsibly. Like, it's awful.
There's a man filling a gas can with a lit cigarette in his mouth in a shed surrounded by other gas cans.
The cameraman doesn't even flinch.
He doesn't even, like... it doesn't matter.
We're leaving out the fact that Joe Exotic is a 2-time candidate for major elections. So
right.
He ran for president.
And that didn't work out so well.
He had a better result running for Oklahoma governor.
Because he had the assistance of, you know,
Walmart manager /
the ammunition department of Walmart manager, who was familiar with Joe from his regular purchases.
He said he bought basically every day
Tannerite and
ammunition. Hundreds of rounds.
Yeah, he decided, you know, he strikes me as your neighborhood, like, you know, he probably frequents a lot of message boards. He's got a lot of what he considers highly evolved political opinions. I thought of him at first, like, is he like the Paul Manafort of Joe Exotic's campaign?
I think the Paul Manafort is, that's a good...
I don't know, Paul Manafort's a lot more of a schemer than that dude was.
He sort of got caught up in it, though, and that's the other thing is...
Once you go to Joe Exotic's, you never leave.
Well, there's something that comes up in the documentary over and over again, and that's that not only do the people who keep the tigers have a sense of inflated power, they have big egos, and they feel like they themselves are powerful for being able to keep these tigers,
yeah,
supposedly. And there's also an angle where those people use the animals and the tigers to draw in other folks who are quote-unquote animal lovers.
Right. Who are subordinate to them, the people.
So Doc Antle, who is known as Bhagavan, who learned all of this tiger collecting and harem, you know, sexual
management?
Assault.
I don't know what word to use.
From...
some other guru.
Indian yogi. I'm going to butcher his name. Sachi Nadata, who had a...
had a lion that we know of.
Right, who was kind of a lion tamer. Ran a place called Yogaville. Was the keynote, kind of the lead speaker at Woodstock.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one who taught Doc Antle these methods, who then taught Joe Exotic, as well as Tim Stark, the guy who owns most monkeys and
The guy with the monkey on his front.
These panthers to death.
Yeah.
Yeah, what was his motto?
His line about, you know, people say you can't get anything done with a monkey on your back. I say put it on your front. And he illustrates that he has a monkey, like, in a sling on his, you know, on his chest.
That's bad.
So these folks basically use the tigers to entice people and mesmerize them. One of the main points of all of the zoos that are being run, whether it's Doc Antle's, Joe Exotic's, Carol Baskin's, or Tim Stark's, is that you go in, you pay $36, whatever,
or
50
more. Yeah.
Or more, and you pay to take photos petting these cubs. So one of the major contentions is whether or not people should be training animals, training tigers in that way from birth, whether they should be breeding tigers here.
Right.
The difference between conservationism or animal rights and...
Mm-hmm. Animal welfare.
Animal welfare. So the major conflict in the film comes from Joe Exotic versus, really, Joe Exotic and all these other tiger people against a woman named Carol Baskin of Big Cat Rescue, who apparently has a huge following.
Very large, very, you know, friendly, popular social media presence. She's pretty well known, and there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of people who want to volunteer there, who want to go there, who want to visit there. She lived a life where she was a collector. She says that in the 1990s she realized that it was wrong, that now she basically rescues these big cats and probably other exotic animals that we didn't see, but mostly big cats from private collections, these smaller roadside zoos, and she gives them a better place to live through the end of their lives. She's not a breeder. She targets other people like Jeff Lowe, like Joe Exotic, and in particular, she seemed to really, like, run afoul of Joe Exotic.
Yeah, they seem to really kind of have the major beef.
Yeah.
Rivalry was between those two. And, you know, one of her points is that she claims that their use of, they're essentially having tiger cubs being petted by humans,
mm-hmm.
is like one of the main things she has a beef with.
Right. Well, her point is that, and other people who are against, you know, this like cub petting industry, is you can only have a tiger cub is only safe for anyone, especially a small child, to be near for a few weeks of its life. You got maybe 10 to 12 weeks until it's too big and it's too dangerous to let a little kid hold it or an adult, you know, take their picture next to his face. And so at the end of those 12 weeks, you've got a tiger that isn't making you any money, and now it's going to cost you money to feed it. And you can't use that tiger anymore, but you still have this business to maintain, so you're going to get another one and another one and another one.
Yeah, and the idea is that, you know, being handled by humans that really essentially warps their...
Right. And well, in the life that they're going to live.
Understanding of themselves. And not to mention, tigers are solitary animals. They're not meant to be...
No, and they have huge around. Territories, you know, hundreds of miles.
Yeah.
And you're going to put them, at best, in what, a portion of an acre of an enclosure? At worst, you see some animals in some pretty small cages in this film.
Well, recently, that Werner Herzog clip of him talking about the deranged penguin seems to be making its rounds online. And I can't remember if it was Joe Rogan, somebody was talking to some animal expert about it. And he's like, yeah, I mean, if you were to take an animal that was a solitary animal like this, not a pack animal, and put them around other creatures that way, the same way we get kind of,
mm-hmm.
we start to lose it under isolation,
They
start to lose it if they're in a community. It's not what they're meant for.
Yeah.
So any of these people, Carol Baskin, and, you know, she might see herself as doing the right thing, and she's still closing tigers in this small space. She's still
charging an admission to see them.
And she's making millions of dollars.
And there are other, if you're truly a sanctuary, most sanctuaries are not open to the public to visit at all. There's just a big place, you know, out in the country somewhere, out in the desert somewhere, where those animals go live. And they're taken care of, and we don't charge admissions to see them. We just let them live their lives until they're dead.
So they have this huge rivalry, and it essentially ends with Joe being charged with
hiring someone to kill Carol
for hire. And that story, I mean, I feel like we're running out of time to cover Tiger King yet. It involves the teardrop sporting 55-year-old ex-con.
He's probably younger than that, but, you know.
Yeah, he looked bad.
He's got some road wear. Yeah, and I gotta say, I'm not saying Joe Exotic is innocent. He's done a lot of really bad things. He's manipulated people. He's harmed people. He's harmed animals. You know, this is not to say that he is blameless in any of this. However, watching the film, I got the feeling that the Department of the Interior that eventually gets him? The Department of the Interior, out of this group of people, picked the poorest, the dirtiest, the lowest class,
the queerest, most marginalized,
to pin on all of these things. And the film is focusing on Joe, and a lot of our attention is mostly on Joe, but
he's also a really loud personality.
He's a very loud personality, and I gotta, you know, I really think he's not the only guilty one in this.
Certainly not. And I think there's a thread of homophobia throughout the film. I mean, you know, everybody kind of had the understanding that, oh, well, I guess the director is really the only person in this that's even not a scumbag. And no, he pretty much misgenders one of the characters the entire way through the film, never corrects it.
Well, and there was something weird about, like, the director made a statement later that wasn't him who chose to show his name that way. With the person's, I guess it's probably their legal first name that they don't use. That wasn't the film. The director wanted to say that wasn't his decision to show it that way, or something like that. That he wanted to make clear that person, it's the person who has his hand amputated, basically below the elbow, an army amputation. That they use he, him pronouns, and that his name is Saf.
So what? There's a bunch of stuff we can't really cover because we just don't have time.
Right.
Like the guy, one of the employees is a demolition derby amputee.
Yes.
Who drives around with a human skeleton in his
passenger. Yeah, there's a skeleton riding shotgun. The camera doesn't even do a close-up on it.
There's too much happening. There's the pizza shop that's started in the zoo that uses expired Walmart meat that the
Walmart had to throw away, and they've been collecting it ostensibly to feed the tigers, but it doesn't just feed the tigers. Where do you, that's the thing, like, where do you even start, where do you end?
Man, there's so much.
There's so much, and that was really, you know, it's entertaining. It passed the time for it took us like 2 or 3 days to watch all of it.
Sensationalism is fine.
It really is, and it was something, I love a documentary that teaches me about something I didn't know about. There's some flaws to it. I feel like the timeline of it is kind of hard to follow. Yeah. Like, the one of Joe's husbands, John Finley, the way that he appears in the documentary makes you think that he was with Joe a lot longer over the course of the film seems to take place from about 2014 to 2018, when Finley broke up with him in 2014. Yet he's still there, like, giving his input, giving his accounts of what happened, like,
a lot of the footage features him.
And not just footage, like, at the beginning of the story, so to speak. They keep going back to it. And they keep going back to him, and that seems to happen with a lot of the people. It's hard to tell when somebody showed up and when they left.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's certainly not perfect, but it's certainly effective.
It's definitely effective, and it leaves you with a lot more questions. So one of the things coming up is the Netflix miniseries that's fictionalized, which will star Kate McKinnon as Carol Baskin. I don't know who the director who's creating this yet. In the running to play Joe Exotic is either Michael Keaton, David Spade, or Ed Norton is a possible name.
Well, that's just what the internet is demanding.
That's what the internet's demanding. So I know what my pick is. It's got to be Ed Norton.
I'm picking Ed Norton also. Out of those three?
Listeners, if you've gotten a chance to see Tiger King, go ahead and write in or tweet us at On the Tropes at Twitter who your pick to play Joe Exotic would be. And if you've got a director pick or anything like that, let us know too.
Have you ever seen anything in a van? Do you know anybody who had a big cat?
My major takeaway from this film, you can be anything you want to be.
Well, the sad part is, if we want to talk about like wish fulfillment or something, Joe Exotic finally became famous the way he wanted to.
Yeah.
And right now he's in isolation in a federal penitentiary, and he likely has no idea that any of this is happening.
And if anybody can slide him a kite, let him know what's happening, do so, definitely.
Call your friends, call your relatives.
So, to completely shamelessly steal from one of my favorite podcasts, the Michelle Mission, the Black Tribbles Network. Eva, would you say this is worth a watch, or
oh hell yeah,
people should watch this thing?
Absolutely. I mean, I would have a hard time believing at this point that anybody hasn't started it. It's hard, you know.
Yeah, the Tiger Fever is intense.
I would say if you've been a person, if you heard about it and you were worried about like animal cruelty scenes, if that was what was keeping you from watching it, I would say it's pretty minimal. You're going to, for most of the series, most of the first six episodes, people talk about it. However, it's not shown. As this film goes on and they are showing that Joe is more unhinged, they do show him hitting some of the cats with a stick.
Mm-hmm.
To try to get them. And there's, when he's being dragged by one, he aims a gun at one and he shoots into the ground.
Yeah.
To try to scare it. What was the one about them killing dolphins?
I don't know if I knew.
The documentary from like, I don't know, like 2013, 2014.
The Blackfish? The one
the other the one.
Killer whales?
Where they were showing like the fishing boats that killed the dolphins.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot of footage. There is a lot of description of animal cruelty.
Yeah, but it's not really. It's pretty minimal visually, I would say. It's not that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think seeing the guy get his arm ripped off was a lot more traumatic than.
Absolutely, there is a scene of something that happened kind of close to us in Zanesville, Ohio. A few years ago, a man who was one of these collectors released all of his animals and committed suicide. And the highway patrol had to kill the animals. And there's a couple of shots of the scene where there's like several dozen lions and tigers dead laid out across the road. That's hard to watch, but it's pretty brief. Yeah. I would say if that's what's been keeping you from watching it, it's pretty easy to look away. It's not too pervasive.
Yeah, and for another Zanesville story, folks, check out Father and the Angels by William Manners. Just a quaint story about a small town Jewish family and the son of a rabbi. So, you ready to move into our list?
Because listeners, we've got Tiger Fever?
We've got Tiger Fever, so listeners, we are going to talk about our top five tigers right after the break.
I thought this tape was going to be a conversation stimulator, man. I was gonna ask you for your top five records to play on a Monday morning and all that, and you just had to f***ing ruin it.
Hope we'll do it next Monday.
No! I'm gonna do it now!
So, Eva, you wanna start with your...
So are we gonna do one and one like we normally do as a round, or are we just gonna do all five at once?
I think we should do one.
One at a time?
Mm.
Okay. So my number five is Hobbs, even though I'm not... You know, I've changed my view of Calvin and Hobbes over the course of my life. Hobbes is still an important tiger.
He is.
He's very cunning. He moves in ways that are not seen by almost anyone. Mm-hmm. And he does very sinister things at times.
Yeah, he does. I like the word cunning, though, because he does have that typical kind of tiger wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
He's
also incredibly appealing to the girl next door.
Mm. Maybe it's... Yep. Set some of these guys down the road.
I mean, I wonder if that's where Calvin's at now. You know, does he have his own like roadside attraction of giant cats now? It's possible.
It's possible.
What's your number five?
So my number five is created by Eugene Coakley,
in 1951, Tony the Tiger of the Kellogg Company, really just one of the probably the most iconic cereal mascot there is. Definitely the most dangerous one and the most athletic, and probably the one who has the biggest ego. Like, I feel like if of all these characters, Tony the Tiger would be the one to have a tiger call.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if which came first, him or the SO, the gas station tiger. I think they were both in the 50s.
I think they were, and I believe the SO...
Probably around the same time.
No, actually, 12 years later.
SO was that much later?
Yeah, now ExxonMobil.
Yeah.
Used a similar tiger.
Yeah.
So yeah, well, Tony the Tiger, he's great.
Mm-hmm.
Eva, what's your number four?
My number four is Tigger.
Mm-hmm.
Winnie the Pooh meets Tigger in the middle of the night. It's a dark and stormy night, and he hears a strange sound that he's never heard before, and there's a giant cat at his door demanding to be fed. And that's how we meet Tigger. And then I remember the cartoon has him... Is it that after he leaves, Pooh has the nightmare about Heffalumps and Woozles, where they do that crazy dance?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tigger is one of my early favorites. One of the most courageous. He's probably the bravest one on the show.
Yeah.
So my number four is from Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, one of the early seasons. The White Tiger Zord, who is, of course, piloted by the White Ranger, formerly the Green Ranger. And when he, Tommy Oliver, when he had his upgrade, he had this great Zord, the White Tiger Zord, and we were all just like completely amazed. He kind of has like a Sphinx kind of look, like in his head. Man, I follow this guy. I'll find his Twitter and give him a shout out. He basically puts up old like kung fu flicks, like clips,
okay,
on Twitter. And man, like he posted some of the choreography from the Power Rangers, because of course the fighting was all like footage from Japan.
Mm-hmm.
The only stuff that was filmed here in America when they didn't have their costumes up. And some of them were like way ahead of their time. They're really intense. The stunts are dangerous. So yeah, the Tiger Zord. Eva, what is your number three?
Not so great. We talked a while back, and this is something that maybe we'll have to revisit now that we're in isolation and we're running out of stuff to amuse ourselves. The things that scared us the most,
mm-hmm,
and wanting to watch the things that scared us the most. This is the thing that scares me the most of my entire life. This is I guess it's a children's book. I've never met a person who said that they loved this book as a child, but it exists. And when I was little, I was so afraid of this book that if it were like on the shelf at my grandma's house, or if it was pulled out for some reason, I was afraid to walk near the bookshelf. I was afraid to make eye contact with the book, because that meant that the book and the thing on the front of the book could see me if I was looking at it, and that meant that it could like come after me or somehow. And that's the Saggy Baggy Elephant.
Oh, wow.
The Saggy Baggy Elephant is terrifying. There's like this one picture of it like using its trunk to like pull its skin up off of its leg or something, like its haunches or something. It's very unclear to me because, like I said, I don't want to look at it. But there's a tiger in that, and the tiger is also frightening to me. And then there was another one, I think it's the same illustrator or a very similar style, with a lion. It was like a different book with a lion on it, and that lion scared the hell out of me too. So that's the thing that actually scares me the most. But I will not read it. I saw it for sale, like at some place that had like a whole rack of little golden books, like reprints of them, and I was like, oh, it's a Saggy Baggy Elephant. Oh, it's been like 30 years. Maybe I'm not afraid of it anymore. And I still couldn't. I could look at it, but I didn't pick it up.
It's creepy.
It's so scary. I would love to hear from somebody that actually enjoyed that book as a child. What's your number three?
So my number three is Daniel Striped Tiger, the first puppet ever to appear on the Children's Corner in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. So he's just like a shy young tiger. He lives in a non-functioning grandfather clock and loves make-believe, and he's really wise and intelligent when he finally does speak, when he kind of breaks out of his shell. And just a great recurring character. I mean, I think as a kid,
Mr. Rogers was a huge influence.
That tiger puppet scared me a bit too.
The puppets, like looking back, I think, you know, they're not crude necessarily. Yet they're
no, old. It's a very detailed little puppet, but it doesn't move very much.
Yeah, and the eyes are a little funny.
So it doesn't, it's just this voice coming out of it, and it kind of creeped me out as a kid.
Eva, what's your number two?
Well, remember what we said about Tiger King, about how, you know, if somebody tells you to go look at something in a van, you tell them no.
Yeah.
My number two is a similar lesson, a similar valuable lesson from Apocalypse Now. And that's never get off the boat.
Mm.
So it's the tiger in Apocalypse Now.
Man, what a great scene.
Yeah.
And isn't that when, was it Lance? Is he high on, like...
I don't think he's high yet.
He's not high yet.
It's him and Chef is the one who's going, never get off the boat, never get off the boat, never get off the boat.
Just phenomenal.
Yeah.
What a great movie.
What's your number two?
Number two... I think I'm going to go with... This is a hard one. I'm going to go with Shere Khan.
My number two.
Nice.
The King of Tigers, really. I mean, literally the Royal Tiger, the Tiger King. The original Tiger King.
Yeah.
Something about Shere Khan is just... I mean, he's every tiger trope.
Mm-hmm.
He's this loner. He's... And one thing that's interesting, when I was doing research, I had forgotten this from reading the book. He's actually, he has a bad leg.
Yeah, I remember, because that's why he hates people.
Yeah. Yeah, so he, you know, he kind of has this chip on his shoulder, you know.
Yeah.
Just what a great villain. Voiced by some really great actors.
I was just going to ask you, I can't remember who it was. I wanted to say Sebastian Cabot, but he was the voice of the other cat, Bagheera.
Yeah, we just...
We were just talking about it.
Yeah, because...
Because we can't stop talking about cats. And speaking of cats...
It was... Let's see... George Sanders.
Yeah, George Sanders.
So George Sanders, who also was King Richard, Mr. Freeze in the original Batman, was married to two Gabors. Jaja, Andrew's sister.
Magda.
Had a singing career, and of course, his autobiography, Memoirs of a Professional Cad.
Yeah.
And George Sanders, man. Wow. Probably would have had a tiger cult.
Who's to say he didn't? He had two Gabors.
So, Eva, what is your...
My number one. Well, not a tiger, however. Favorite cat. I feel like we should mention that we've been in a room with a only slightly domesticated animal this whole time. You gonna say anything? Nope. He's purring too much. So my number one is from Angela Carter's Bloody Chamber, and it's called The Tiger's Bride.
Mm.
It's one of her two stories that are a derivative of Beauty and the Beast. And in this one, it follows the traditional story of, you know, a girl stuck in a castle with a beast. And however, at the end of it, rather than him turning back into his true form of a human, she sees him in his beast form, he's a tiger, and he starts licking her, and he licks off her skin. And there's a really beautiful description of it that I didn't look up. He talks about, like, you know, every inch of her skin coming off and revealing her fur underneath. And so then wow. they can run around together now. There's several of Angela Carter's stories in that book that have a female character leaving a life, leaving the human world and going off to run with the animals.
Mm-hmm. That's a great story.
Great. One of my favorite books.
So my number one, from probably my first favorite cartoon, He-Man, Masters of the Universe, Battle Cat. Wow, what a character. So the conceit of He-Man is that, much like Captain Marvel, is pure wish fulfillment. You know, it's a character that is kind of, it's the 80s, a heavily muscled, bumbling Clark Kent type, who transforms into He-Man. And when that happens, his cowering tiger, pet tiger, transforms into this like warrior cat that's armored, and you know, he's huge, and you know, it's a green tiger with orange stripes. I used to have like a little plastic toy that barely moved, and it was really cool because I had this detailed armor that you could put on. Just an incredible cartoon, incredible character, great tiger. I think it's one thing I like too. Like, I looked up, and instead of making a mythical creature, I don't think they ever really, I think they do actually call him a tiger at some point in the cartoon. And that shout out I was looking for, the Twitter account at Shinobi Fist, one of my favorites. Check out clips of old school kung fu movies.
Yeah. Trivia question for you. You know, we're talking about people who keep tigers or other big cats, and there's a statistic in the film that says that there are more big cats in the United States in captivity than there are in the wild in the rest of the world. What year do you think the first big cat was exhibited for public view in the United States? When did the first one get here?
Is this a question for me?
Yep.
Oh, man. I'm going to say 1890.
1716.
Wow.
A man in Boston named Arthur Savage charged an admission for people to come into his house and see his lion. So maybe this is the American experience.
And with that, listeners, we're going to continue our period of isolation and try to recover from this tiger fever that we have.
Highly unlikely.
And stay safe. Stay home. Listen to the scientists, the medical people, all that stuff. Take very good care of yourselves and each other, and listen to us at tvtropes.org, on thetropes.podomatic.com. Follow us on Twitter at onthetropes, Instagram at onthetropes, facebook.com/onthetropes.
Write us mail.
We have a patreon.com/onthetropes. Basically all the whole gamut of social media and all those things. Write us mail, tell us your thoughts, and we will see you next time.